It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. This week, the United States Supreme Court heard arguments in a case about bans on gender-affirming care for youth who are transgender. One of the people at the center of this case is a 16-year-old trans woman known by the initials LW out of Nashville. Here's LW speaking to ABC News about access to care helped her.
I think really the big difference was when I got on hormones. That was incredibly helpful. I feel amazing after that. And I'm pretty, you know, maybe it's just because the gender dysphoria is so bad. Maybe I feel normal now.
She and her parents are challenging Tennessee's ban, and the decision in this case is expected to have implications across the country and beyond the Supreme Court. Even in a state like Illinois, which protects access to gender-affirming care for children and adults, there are questions about what might happen to that care once President-elect Trump returns to office. Lisa Shanker covered this earlier this week for the Chicago Tribune. She's a business reporter with an emphasis on healthcare. She joins us now. Lisa, welcome to the 21st Show.
Thank you.
Briefly, what are the sorts of things that fall under this umbrella of gender-affirming care? It's a phrase we hear a lot. What exactly does that mean?
Sure. It really includes a range of services. It can be everything from counseling to medications to delay puberty, hormone therapy, all the way up to surgery.
So a wide range. How does Illinois compare to the rest of the country? I mentioned that Supreme Court case is about Tennessee. I think I've read there are at least 20 other states that have similar laws to what Tennessee does. Where is Illinois on this?
Right. So Illinois has gone out of its way to try to protect gender-affirming care. In 2023, Governor Pritzker signed a bill requiring state-regulated insurance plans to cover hormone therapy medications to treat gender dysphoria. And that same law also shields patients and providers of gender-affirming care in Illinois from legal actions that other states might take.
And so as a result of that, we've seen a lot of out-of-staters coming here, right, for care?
Yeah, that's what I've been told by providers in Illinois, that similar to the way Illinois has become a place that people travel to for abortion, they've also seen some people traveling to Illinois for transgender or for gender affirming care.
All right. So we saw in this past election year, Trump and other Republicans making campaign issues out of how trans people are allowed to participate in life, whether it's going to the bathroom or participating in sports, et cetera, and whether they can access this sort of care we've been talking about. With that in mind, can you talk about the anxiety that you and the health providers you've spoken to have heard from trans people in the aftermath of this election?
Sure. I mean, I think, like you were saying, Donald Trump made it very clear that he really opposed gender-affirming care for minors. He has pledged to take away federal funding from hospitals and other providers that do gender-affirming care for minors. So even though Illinois has this law, I think there are a lot of questions in Illinois about how our hospitals would continue to provide gender-affirming care to minors, how other providers would continue to provide that care if Donald Trump makes good on his promise and really does withhold federal funding from those providers.
And the idea was, or maybe I should ask, is the idea that it would just be federal funding for that care or potentially any federal funding if a medical, a hospital or a medical group does this sort of work?
I mean, I think he has said that he wants to take Medicaid and Medicare dollars away from providers that do this kind of work. How his campaign promises might differ from what actually happens, we'll see. But I think there's a real fear that hospitals and other providers could lose like major, major federal funding if they continue providing gender-affirming care for minors when Donald Trump begins his presidency.
And so what about individual, I guess, people? What are they saying and thinking about? I think there was somebody in your story who was wondering about getting sort of stockpiling their medicine, right?
Right, because, one of the services within gender-affirming care is hormone therapy medications, which people may need for a short amount of time, they may need for a long amount of time. It really just depends on the individual But the providers I spoke with said that they've been hearing from their patients, you know, how can I get as many refills of this as possible? And Planned Parenthood told me that they, you know, I've heard some people asking if they could get 4 years worth of the medications because they're concerned that they might not be able to get these medications depending on what the Trump administration does.
What have the health providers told you about the effects on this sort of care if, you know, the Trump administration does follow through on these campaign pledges to end federal funding? What does that mean for the organizations themselves and the people affected?
I mean, it would be devastating to the providers, to the hospitals and other care organizations that provide this type of care. I mean, they rely very heavily on federal funding. And it's, you know, I think they're kind of unclear on how they would be able to operate without that money. There's questions about whether would they have to stop providing gender-affirming care or change what they provide in order to still get federal funding? Are there other funding streams they might be able to take advantage of? Like, would the state of Illinois be able to step up and replace some funding? I think there's just a lot of questions out there. And I think it's scary for transgender patients as well because of the uncertainty. They just don't know what the coming years are going to bring. And they rely on these hormone therapies. It's not really something you could just start and stop. I mean, it can be a real health issue.
Well, with that in mind, how have you been seeing people prepare for that possibility, or even, you know, the chance of a ban, both in and outside of the sort of professional healthcare settings?
I mean, I think in addition to stockpiling, trying to stockpile hormone therapy medications where they can, I mean, that's not always possible. But I mean, there's that happening. And I think the organizations, there are organizations in Illinois, Planned Parenthood, the ACLU of Illinois, Equality Illinois, these organizations are all just trying to talk with lawmakers right now. They're getting the ACLU of Illinois is kind of gearing up in case there's litigation that's going to be happening. I think what I kept hearing was that nobody knows exactly what Donald Trump's administration is going to do. We know what he has said he wants to do, but we don't know how narrow or wide-ranging it will end up being. And so they're kind of just trying to prepare for a lot of possibilities at once.
Lisa Schenker is a business reporter with a focus on healthcare at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for sharing your reporting with us.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show, and we go now to national politics. And with us, as always, for that is Linda Kenyon, Illinois Public Media's Washington correspondent. Linda, hello. Happy December. Almost the end of the year.
Well, happy December to you. It feels like it's going by at such a fast and furious pace so far.
It does. And lots of ground yet to cover. All right, let's talk about the U.S. Supreme Court. The court heard a case this week about gender-affirming care for trans youth. What exactly is at issue here?
Well, some of the questions from the justices kind of telegraphed how they feel about this case and what are the issues. For example, Justice Sonia Sotomayor said, when you're 1% of the population or less, it's very hard to see how the democratic process is going to protect you. And she told the Solicitor General from the state of Tennessee, this is stemming from a Tennessee case, that referring to the transgender population, that they too need to have some protection, some guarantees that they have equal protection under the law, and raise the issue that maybe this was a case of sex discrimination, and that would be a much larger issue that would transcend, obviously, just the Tennessee state case. Instead, the state of Tennessee is arguing that this is what they call a rational basis review, merely requiring a rational connection between a law and a legitimate state interest. So they're trying to say this is not about sex discrimination. Because if it does become an issue of sex discrimination, again, that is a much larger case, and that deals with the overarching concern about equal protection under the law.
Well, I'm always suspicious of attempts to sort of read the tea leaves or the entrails or whatever metaphor you want to use about the Supreme Court based on arguments. But what do we know so far from the arguments about how the various justices might be thinking about this case?
Well, it's going down pretty much as you might expect, with the conservative justices saying this is something that is a legitimate state question, and the liberal justices saying this is about discrimination against a small population of people. They're also raising, by the way, the concern, and the U.S. Solicitor General arguing on behalf of the Biden administration said, and I'm going to go give you a quote here. She said, maybe the states will ban medical care for adults who are transgender. Maybe they'll ban adoption by transgender people or not allow them to be teachers, she said. This just doesn't look anything like the workaday economic regulation that just gets rational basis review.
Well, it'll be interesting to watch how that continues to play out amid everything else we've been talking about in this area. I do want to talk about the upcoming Trump administration. A lot has happened since we last talked about some of the top officials that President-elect Trump has selected, not yet nominated, because he has to wait until he's sworn in for that. But one of them is a man named Kash Patel, who Trump has designated for FBI director, which is kind of interesting because that job is not actually currently open, and it's a 10-year term that's supposed to span presidential administrations. And Christopher Wray was a Trump appointee himself. He has 3 years left on his term. What's behind this change?
Well, if you ask a lot of the Democrats, they say what's behind this change is the fact that Christopher Wray is too independent and is not kowtowing to any particular administration, least of all the Trump administration. He's following the letter of the law. And as you also know, that Trump does require loyalty. In fact, in many of his cabinet picks so far, you can see loyalty seems to be job number one in the pecking order. And so Christopher Wray was nominated and confirmed as FBI director after Donald Trump fired his first FBI director, you may remember, James Comey. So the FBI director job is a 10-year term. His term does not end until another 2 years. And so that leaves Christopher Wray with either having to resign or be fired. And I suspect that Trump would be very happy to fire him if necessary in order to make the way for Kash Patel. Patel being a very interesting choice because he has railed against the FBI. And he has said that the whole thing needs to be torn apart and gutted. And so this is some very strong words from any nominee, but let alone the fact that, again, we go back to the pecking order on qualifications. He is a very strong Trump supporter, a very big Trump loyalist, and that is very attractive to the president-elect.
You know, you said he wants to gut it and tear it apart. That's not really just a metaphor. He has talked specifically about emptying out the Hoover building and sending everyone out to field offices. Never mind that that's where our major terrorism prevention coordination happens and anti-espionage activities happen in Washington there. He's also got an enemies list that includes people like former Attorney General Bill Barr, who was Trump's AG, John Bolton, who was a national security advisor under Trump, of course, Joe Biden, people even farther down the list of you know, people whose names may not be as widely known, you know, Cassidy Hutchinson, who was a chief of staff to, or an aide to Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows, testified at the January 6th committee. He's also talked about prosecuting journalists. Linda, should we be worried?
I would have my family gathering information, you know, among themselves about how much money they may need to bail me out of jail, just in case. I will tell you that there is some concern here at the White House that they're going to revoke credentials, or they would take away our workspace or our seats in the briefing room. So, yeah, you know, I guess we'll just have to see how this plays out. It's not a really great time for journalists in general, or, you know, anybody who's working for the federal government, or I guess now for the FBI.
Yeah, no, I mean, obviously that would be a major inconvenience and certainly a departure from the norms. But I mean, that's, you know, office space is one thing, prosecutions are another. Where is the Senate on some of these nominees, including Patel?
Well, you know, there are some concerns about Patel because of his rather fiery rhetoric, but there are very, very big concerns about other nominees so far, not the least of which is Pete Hegseth, who is Donald Trump's pick for defense secretary. To give you a little idea about the process, the picks for the cabinet have to be confirmed by the U.S. Senate. So they are on Capitol Hill. They've been there today. They were there yesterday, the day before. They're making the rounds. They're having one-on-one sit-downs with senators who will vote on whether to confirm them. And Hegseth has had a lot of questions come up about his background, about financial mismanagement, about sexual misdeeds, about drunken behavior when he was working in two different veterans groups and was asked to leave his directorialship as at Concerned Veterans for America because of various behaviors. He says it's just a bunch of disgruntled employees, but Pete Hegseth is also a Fox News anchor, and he, as several Fox News employees have said, that they've had very, very big concerns about his drunkenness, and so this is a, you know, this is
worth,
a massive
worth noting.
Job.
He's a Fox News weekend morning anchor, and they're concerned about his drunkenness. Just as a data point.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there. There's so much more to talk about, and we will have to pick it up another week. Linda Kenyon is Washington correspondent for Illinois Public Media. Thanks, as always, for keeping us in the loop. I hope your month continues to pass by at a normal pace.
Thank you. From your lips to, you know, how that goes.
Indeed. All right, coming up after the break, Malort, the notorious Chicago liquor, has gained an unexpected following across the country. We'll talk about how it happened and what's made it appealing to people a long ways away from the Midwest. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.